Welcome to the Context Machine, episode 585. I'm Brian Chaffin, your charming and affable co-host.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your resident alien space bot and Brian's favorite OnlyFans channel. You can find us on contextmachine.io.
That's good. I like that. You can also use, you know, if you're so inclined, you can use contextmachine.io to reach out to us. You can find us on Twitter. We're at Context Machine.
Yes. Also, today's episode is sponsored by LinkedIn Jobs.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm going to tell you more about them, I'm getting a job posting for free later in the show.
Excellent.
So today, Jeff.
Brian.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm fine. Did you watch the season series ender for Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Holy crap! Yes, and I loved it.
It was really good. No spoilers.
I seriously enjoyed it.
It's early enough after it aired, streamed, that we shouldn't give spoiler results. But I will say this: Hayden Christensen has made up for episodes 5 and 6 in my mind. Not that he needed to worry about my opinion, but he has more than redeemed himself for episodes 5 and 6.
You know, for me, I'm totally with you. For me, it makes it so clear how important good writing and good directing is, because Hayden Christensen is a good actor.
Apparently.
And he was handed a crap script.
I want to be the bestest Jedi ever.
Yeah. I mean, what? But then you get Obi-Wan Kenobi series, and Hayden Christensen is really good in it.
He is. In fact, he's really good. I probably should have looked this up myself, but you know, I knew that I was going to be talking to you for the show. Was he in the Darth costume? I mean, was he acting the physical parts for Darth Vader?
Yes. Hayden Christensen played Darth Vader. He was in the Darth Vader costume. So yes, that's actually Hayden Christensen.
Wow.
With James Earl Jones doing the Darth Vader voice.
Is Hayden that big? Because I mean, like, how big was the original? I know that you know his name, and I forget his name. The original Darth actor,
David Prowse was. Yes. He was well over 6 feet tall. He was at least 6.5 feet tall, as I recall. Hayden Christensen is not that tall, but he is taller than Ewan McGregor.
Oh, you know, duh. And I guess between that and a good camera person and some competent directing and writing, that that more than makes up for the lack of he was fantastic. I enjoyed the series a whole lot.
I enjoyed it too. I enjoyed it a lot, and I thought Hayden played Darth Vader really, really well. Like, I felt like I was watching a very intimidating, incredibly dangerous person.
But
and that's what you should feel with Darth Vader.
I also felt that, you know, that bridge between I'm going to be the best Jedi ever and the hate and anger of Darth Vader starting in episode 4. Right? Mm-hmm. I now believe that transition from Anakin to Darth Vader.
Yeah, I totally get it. For me, that belief in the transition happened much earlier than it did for you, because I've watched the Clone Wars animated series, which I don't think you have.
I have only seen a couple of episodes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I've watched the whole thing. I've enjoyed it so much. I have watched it more than once. And seeing Anakin Skywalker in the animated series, you get to see the Anakin Skywalker we should have had in episodes two and three, but didn't get. And that Anakin Skywalker tracks really well with the Darth Vader that we see in the Obi-Wan series, the Darth Vader we see in episode 4, and the Darth Vader that we saw in Rogue One.
All right, makes sense, man. So I all told, if you haven't seen Obi-Wan Kenobi, it's great. And I personally recommend it.
Same. I really enjoyed the series. By the way, Hayden is open to portraying Darth Vader in other Star Wars properties if it's appropriate.
Well, is this the last Obi? Is this like season one of multiple seasons of Obi-Wan Kenobi?
No, it's season one of season one. Obi-Wan Kenobi was conceived as a mini series.
So it's okay. So it's a 6-part. So
it's movie. It's a contained series. Yeah, 6-part movie.
All right, that makes sense. I'm a little bummed by that. I would have enjoyed. I guess maybe there's not enough story to tell between this series and episode 4. But I would have enjoyed seeing it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Where we are now in Obi-Wan Kenobi's story arc is the build up to his appearance in the original Star Wars movie, and we know from all the other Star Wars properties that have come before, this is not a spoiler, at least it shouldn't be anymore, Obi-Wan Kenobi is supposed to be doing the special training that Qui-Gon Jinn did, and that Yoda was working on. This comes out of the Clone Wars animated series, to be able to become a Force ghost. So
that makes sense.
That's what Obi-Wan is supposed to be doing.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Obi-Wan Kenobi. Hmm. I wonder if he means old Ben Kenobi.
That old wizard, you stay away from him. You drink your blue milk and shut your pie hole.
I always hated that. It's like, you think that's what he meant? Think that's what she meant?
You think? Well, to be fair, he was a whiny teenager living on an evaporator farm on a crap hole middle of nowhere planet that apparently is really the center of the Star Wars galaxy.
Apparently, it is. By the way, and another thing I enjoyed, no spoilers, but I enjoyed Uncle Owen and Aunt Peru. Is that her name?
Buru with
Buru,
a B.
Buru. Buru or Buru?
Buru.
Buru. All right. I enjoyed Uncle Owen and Aunt Buru in the series Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. Watch it.
They were good.
If you haven't watched it, watch it. If you haven't watched it, let us know what you think.
Yeah, please.
We would appreciate it. Okay. Before I take us down another rabbit hole. Or rat hole.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were about to say, well, before we do the sponsor and wrap up the show. But yeah. Okay. Next rabbit hole.
This episode is theoretically about CarPlay and the CarPlay announcement stemming out of WWDC and what it might mean. And I think you saw some speculation out there. That's how you hooked me into talking about it.
All right. So I'll give you the speculation along with my take on it.
Give us the news first.
Okay, so the news is Apple during WWDC showed off a new version of CarPlay, and this version of CarPlay, instead of being simply the display in-dash display for an infotainment system, adds to that a whole thing where, if your car has a dashboard a display that runs the entire width of your dashboard, you can now have an Apple interface that's part of the CarPlay experience that gives you all this data about your car.
CarPlay will scale up to support whatever size interface you have on your car.
Yes, and it will. replace the built-in interface for your dashboard, you know, when you have your iPhone connected. So,
but all that's the only normal for cars
that you would see.
That's only for cars where a screen has become the full dashboard, though, right?
Yes, and that also means cars that are built to support the new features of CarPlay. So really, we're talking about car makers rolling this into their products in 2023, which means that we'll really start seeing this out in the wild in 2024, probably.
Got it. Okay. All right.
So a whole replacement for the car dash interface, done Apple style. You can customize it for what you want to see and where you want to see the information, and done with the Apple style.
Makes sense. That's what Apple announced. And then what do they call it? The internet? I don't do that anymore. So you saw some speculation.
On the dump trucks and tubes thing. Yeah. speculation that this is the next phase.
Good stuff.
We are insufferable.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the next phase in Apple's Project Titan. And this is ultimately leading to Apple's own car. Alternately, this is Apple's end goal. They want to be the software that's driving the interface in everyone's car, which of course means you also have to have an iPhone to go with it. And when we were having our discussion before the show, you mentioned, well, you know, maybe that could also mean that Apple has shifted gears. See how I did that? Where the plan was, let's do a car and the software, and and everyone else can use the software too. We're just doing the software.
Well, you had also mentioned that some people were trying to argue that this has always been Apple's plan.
Yes.
I'm gonna put the kibosh on that right now. I've already put the kibosh on that several times, but I am contractually obligated to do it again. I have met people that were working on the original Project Titan who were there to make a car. I met these folks. They were car people. They weren't iPhone people. They weren't software people. They were car people. And it is
okay.
It is indisputable that at one point Apple was working on its own car. That is a fact. It is not an opinion. It is a fact. Now,
okay, and you have firsthand knowledge of this.
Yes, I have I guess they could have been lying to me about what they were doing, but that's not weird.
Likely.
That's so, no. They were not.
That would be weird.
I'm confident that they were not.
Okay, so that's. I take that as fact. You have proof that Apple's intention, at least in the beginning, was to produce a car.
To produce a physical car. It may or may not have been intended from the get-go to be an end-user car, like, you know, something intended for the retail market. But Apple was working to make a car. This was not this did not start out as a project to be dashboard software for everybody else's car. That actually just kind of infuriates me. It's so silly.
All right. So people, if you totally want to trigger Brian, just when you see him, be sure and contradict him and let him know that you think he's wrong and Apple never planned on making a car. He'll love it.
Sure. Let's go with that. So the other aspect of this is... you had also mentioned to me that there was like some comparisons between Apple doing all this CarPlay stuff and then the way it used Motorola with the so-called rocker, the very least rocky phone.
That was my speculation. I added in based.
Oh, that was your speculation.
You know what?
So that was just you.
That was my wrong speculation.
Okay.
Okay, so here's a what if that I tossed out there. You know, if Apple is still planning on producing a physical car, what if rolling out this new version of CarPlay is Apple using the same strategy that they used with the Rocker and Motorola, where they partnered with the hardware maker, let them use the software, collect all the data, figure out what works and what doesn't, and then make a better product themselves using their own software. And you're giving that a big nope.
I feel like I can logically deconstruct that argument. For one thing, there's a huge difference between Apple partnering up with Motorola on the Rocker, which was, by the way, a clear using of Motorola by Apple.
You'd think Motorola would have seen that coming.
I don't know. It was one of the first times Apple had done that. So I'm going to have to give Motorola a pass for not realizing what was coming. Plus, if they had really done it right, might have changed things. Nah, it wouldn't have.
No, it wouldn't have. I'm certain that Steve Jobs is just using them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he made it sound really good.
But
in retrospect, Motorola was like, yeah, we should have seen that coming.
Here is the difference. Why that doesn't make for a good comparison for this car thing. Apple has a vested interest in having its iPhones be useful in every car possible without Apple making the car.
Sure.
And that was not the case for Apple's phone. Apple was planning on making its own connected iPhone. Yeah, what became the iPhone, and it wanted the information, but it wasn't trying to, like, the only way this would make the comparison to the Rocker make sense is if Apple's goal at that time was all iTunes centric, that Apple wanted iTunes to be the on phone music store for every Nokia device, every Samsung device, all of the crappy cell phones that were out there. And that was not Apple's goal.
No, Apple's goal was to control the whole thing. But their interim goal was, let's let someone else foot the bill for the research.
And for sure.
That's where the Rocker comparison comes in for me. Yeah, as a what if, you know, what if Apple is letting the car manufacturers foot the bill for the research before they release their own car?
Okay, all right. I've got a problem with that too, though. Because when it comes to the dashboard interface for accessing maps, for accessing mm-hmm. music, for accessing your phone calls and mm-hmm. your text messages, that is... a relatively small part of the equation when it comes to the software that runs a car. And I don't think there's a whole lot of benefit to Apple seeing this as a research project to figure out how to make their own car, when instead the end goal is to just make sure that the iPhone is useful and even necessary to some people for their car.
I totally agree with you on that. Yeah, Apple wants the iPhone to be the thing that you can't live without.
Yeah,
it's just part of everything you do.
Right. It's like Phil. What's Phil's last name?
Schiller.
Schiller. Good Lord. Yeah, we don't.
You've been out of this for a while, haven't you?
We don't need anybody knowing what a dork I am. What a ridiculous person I am. So the what Phil Schiller said is that Apple wants to be at the center of where we live our lives. I think that's a quote. And
that sounds very familiar. So I think you're close enough on the quote.
You know, so desk, living room, cars. Although I would say the kitchen is a part of that too. But other than the toaster fridge.
Well, how about home office car? I'm trying to help you here.
Yeah, that's kind. That's kind. But,
you know, the guy that didn't know Phil Schiller's last name.
I could completely, like, it's drawing a blank. Oh, wait, hold on. You still don't need people to know that. So the, I took it right out. So the thing here is that CarPlay as an interface is in and of itself an end goal. Now, that end goal might exist side by side with the goal of making a car, right? And Apple may certainly use some data that it has gathered from CarPlay to make its car better. But at the end of the day, CarPlay is still just an information interface. It's not running the car.
That is true. Yes. This is all about information collection and display.
Information.
Just like current CarPlay.
Yeah. Okay. I accept your apology.
I'm confused. When did I apologize?
Right.
Right after you forgot Phil Schiller's last name.
Everyone. I'm just saying everyone heard your apology.
You know what else I heard?
What?
You didn't know Phil Schiller's last name.
That's true. Unfortunately, they did. Okay, so.
I'm so glad you're editing that out, because I don't want people to actually hear that.
Yeah, you don't want to be associated with anyone where that's the case. So let's talk about what Apple is doing. And actually, you know what? Before we do that. Before we do that, let me tell you instead about LinkedIn Jobs. What do you think about that?
Oh, my God. Yes, please.
Okay. So here's the deal. Hiring, still hard. Used to be, you know, there was definitely a period of time where, like, finding a job was hard. Currently, hiring is hard. It is hard to find good people for the positions that you have. And that's where LinkedIn Jobs comes in, because they help you find the people that you want to interview faster and for free. You can create a free job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 810 million people. It's a lot of folks. Then you can add your jobs and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring, so that your network can help you find the right people to hire. You can use their simple tools like screening questions that makes it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience, so that you can quickly prioritize who you would like to interview and hire. And then my favorite thing, I've mentioned this before, but my favorite thing is the dashboard, where you can easily manage and control your job postings and the potential candidates for those jobs. Makes it way easier to do all of that process, and that makes it easier to do your hiring. That's the key part here. LinkedIn Jobs can help you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. For instance, did you know that every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? That's
wow.
It is a lot of people. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. Once again, that's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And as always, we want to thank them very much for sponsoring this week's show. Isn't that right, Jeff?
Yes. Yes. I think, that is.
Excellent. All right. That's
a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. Another place that you'll find a lot of people is the planet.
What the hell kind of transition was that?
It was a brilliant transition. Earth has a lot of people and has a lot of cars, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember that thing that Tim Cook said back on stage? years ago. Play straight, man.
I'm really happy to be here. We have some really exciting things to share with you today.
Yeah, it's okay. That's it. There was another time, though, he said he was being interviewed, and he said...
Oh, tell me, Brian. I've never heard this. Please tell me. Tell me.
He said, when asked about the automobile industry, because this is when rumors were really rampant that Apple was working on its own car, and he said that there were three interesting things happening in the world of automobiles today. The first one was autonomous vehicles. Second one was electric vehicles. And the third one was ride sharing. And then he said the interesting thing. He said that being at the intersection of those three things was an interesting place to be.
All right. Now, you being the person who is the master of TeamSpeak.
At your service.
You've been able to glean from that what Tim actually means.
Yeah, I don't think that even requires some Nostradamus level, interpretation. He is, to me, he was just clearly saying that Apple either wants to make a car for ride-sharing services or wants to operate its own fleet of ride-sharing cars. And that they would be autonomous, okay. And that they would be electric.
So you mean like the latter part of your statement would be like instead of calling an Uber, you'd call an Apple Ride.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And Apple could do that two ways. One, it could maintain that fleet. Or two, it could actually just provide the cars that. What's the Chinese company that they own a big part of? Didi?
I think so. I almost said Waymo, but that's not it. That's not a car thing at all. It might be.
Yeah.
Are you making sausage?
I did. I just made some sausage. I confirmed what I thought I knew. Didi is a Chinese ride-sharing company that Apple plopped a $1 billion into. And I would say that is definitely a case where, in this case, Didi is Motorola.
Okay. Yeah. Right. I'll accept that. I accept your apology.
Okay. So Apple could either provide the cars for competing ride-sharing services to use, or Apple could actually maintain its own fleet. And here's the deal. So again, and I've done this before, I'm going to keep doing it, going to give Dave Hamilton credit for pointing out to me that one of the weirdest things that we do right now is dedicate enormous amounts of land to storing cars that aren't being used.
Yes, I remember Dave talking about this on more than one occasion. Yes, yeah. And it's a great observation.
Like so, out in front of there's a 2-car garage underneath my townhome, and the street is full of cars on both sides of the road. In San Francisco, street parking, like very few people have garages. Street parking is kind of a thing. You've got parking garages in New York City, parking garage. People will rent a slot in a parking garage where their car is parked in New York City. And the garages, I mean, like there's just so much space dedicated to storing cars that aren't being used. There will eventually be a time when people look back at that and go, wow, that's so weird. What, how did they do that? I mean, like, why would they do that? That's just crazy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, yes, we have moved from a high density culture to a low density culture. And by that, I mean, instead of having like neighborhoods where you have local shops and then the next neighborhood, the local shops and the city all builds together like that. And you don't need to have a lot of cars and you have good public transportation. An example, look at aerial photographs of cities from like the 1930s and then the same spot in the 1970s or 80s. And it goes from houses and apartments and shops and other businesses to parking lots and parking lots and parking lots.
Yeah. Which, you know, makes me think about going back to Austin. I was born and raised in Texas, lived many years in Austin. I used to say that I spent most of my adulthood in Austin, but I think I've actually gotten old enough now where I've spent most of my adulthood in the Bay Area. And going back to Austin to visit friends and family, I'm just struck over the head by how much like concrete has been smeared across the planet.
Like, yeah, it's an ocean of parking lots.
It's an ocean of parking lots, like strip centers everywhere and parking lots everywhere. And you know, pedestrians in Texas as a whole, even in progressive Austin, pedestrians are looked at best, suspect. And at worst, as a nuisance or a problem. Like, right?
Yeah.
And
you see that a lot in Boulder, too, sadly.
Really? Huh.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a nationwide culture thing, this fetish with cars. And even in a place like Boulder, where we do have a very high number of bike trails and walking trails throughout
the city. It's the People's Republic of Boulder, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's also very much, sadly, a NIMBY community. Mm-hmm. For those of you that don't know what that means, it's not in my backyard.
Yeah,
and
everywhere in the States is a NIMBY.
Yeah, it's it's rough, and there's a whole thing about people with their cars, and they don't want the bikes in the way, and it's a thing everywhere.
You know what that reminds me of when. In my early days in Austin, I moved to Austin in the mid to late 80s and lived there until 2002. And somewhere in the early part of that, I remember listening to the local public radio station, which is KUT, very good radio station, in my opinion. And it was some kind of like, talk thing. There was a panel that was discussing stuff, and they were discussing things, and they were had said that someone pointed out that the bus system was approved by voters, the mass transit system in Austin, such as it is, at that point there's now a light rail that's the complete catastrophe, but the bus system that existed had passed with 80 or 90% approval, like this really, really high voter approval for this bus system. But no one used it because the people that were voting for it to get everybody else out of their way.
Oh, yeah. And
that really hit me. Like I've been thinking about that for decades now. And what's my point? My point is that, I had a point. I don't know what I have no idea.
While you're trying to figure out your point, you triggered a point for me, which is one of the big problems we have is that the car fetish has taken us away from accepting public transit and mass transit. And if we could make that into something that was more affordable and more efficient and more available, then that at least in theory would reduce the reliance on individual cars. And as I'm saying this now, I'm going to totally extrapolate out. And wouldn't it be cool if Apple was part of the drive for that technology? Why not scale up their autonomous efforts to public transportation? And now cities are buying Apple autonomous buses and except for charging, but that's why you have extras, they can just run on more efficient schedules 24 hours a day, and they're going to cost less because you don't have as many man hours or people hours going into the cost of operating the vehicles. And wouldn't that be great?
Yes. I mean, I love mass transit. I don't use mass transit because I want everybody else to get out of my way. But I do use mass transit. And like, if I go to New York, I happily use the subways. I would use any kind of light rail system that makes sense. But, you know, one of the problems that we have for mass transit as a whole, in the United States as a whole, is the lack of population density. Like, most areas just don't have enough people crammed into the square yard to make building the infrastructure necessary for mass transit actually make sense.
Which goes back to our car fetish. You know, you get people moving out of the areas where they don't need cars and moving into areas where they do. And now the areas that had a higher number of people don't have as many people anymore. And the mass transit isn't as viable as it once was. And now people need more cars.
Right. And we want those cars because we don't want to have to like rub elbows with our fellow citizens. I mean, that's
the philosophy.
Going back to that Austin observation that I'd made. So here's the thing. I don't think that autonomous buses are going to be the savior of transit systems. I actually think that fleets of centrally controlled but otherwise autonomous vehicles will actually replace most mass transit, or in places that don't have mass transit will leapfrog mass transit.
And, you know, on one hand, okay, great, because we're getting more of the personal cars off the road. On the other hand, we still have all these cars on the road.
Well, yes and no. But now, jump forward even more, and we have talked about this on the show, but it's a topic that I find very interesting. Jump forward to where, like we all know that Uber's plan is to get rid of drivers, and like the biggest problem with Uber and Lyft is the drivers. It's not the biggest problem, but it's certainly
from their perspective, and from
the perspective of some users, right? So if you can take out the driver, you're now not having to pay for that driver, but you're also not having to have that driver be the weak point when it comes to a performance and social friction and money. You're not having to pay them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're not having to worry about what they're doing that's going to get you sued. And if you're a passenger, you don't have to worry about what they're doing that you may end up needing to sue over. So,
yeah.
So, you know, having autonomous vehicles that are fully autonomous, that can truly go from point A to point B in a city with, you know, entirely controlled by the car's onboard computer systems, that's great. Now, put it to where each car is talking to the other, and then jump forward to Uber systems talking to Lyft's system, talking to Didi's system, talking to Apple's system, talking to Google's car system, talking to possibly, you know, Chevrolet and Ford's or GM's and Ford systems, et cetera. So they're all talking together and they can coordinate where cars need to be. So the end result is that I could say, hey, S lady, get me a car, start walking out the front of my house, and the car is going to be pulling up that quick.
I love the concept you've created in principle, even though I think that we'd be much better served with better mass transit. What I think would ultimately happen, though, with this idea that you just presented, is that instead of all of the ride-sharing services figuring out which is the best for you, all the ride-sharing services are going to have their own cars, and people are choosing which ride-sharing service they want. So now you have the Apple rideshare and Uber and Lyft and Didi and whatever else. All these companies have their cars out on the road, and you're just picking the one that you want, as opposed to letting your phone and the services figure out which is going to be the best for this specific ride.
Well, okay. Yes, eventually. I think we'll have these steps. I think that we're going to have fleets of autonomous vehicles operated by, say, Uber, say, Lyft, say, eventually Apple, say, eventually Google, etc. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be their own systems, and they're going to be self-contained. And yeah, you would specifically call your Uber ride or your Apple ride or whatever. And at some point, legislation will force these companies to start talking to each other. And at some point, either capitalism or regulation will actually turn that into a system where you bypass what you just said, because that will be a phase. What you just said, I think, will be a phase. But the eventual phase will essentially be cars that aren't all that differentiated, and everyone's just providing cars to the system so that the system can then give rides to people.
I think that the rideshare companies are going to hate the idea.
That's why it's going to require regulation.
Yeah. And as you're describing it, you're probably right. This is the path that we'll be going down. And
or yet, civilization.
As I hear you talking about. Yeah. Well, civilization, that's total crapshoot right now. But the whole long-term plan or projection that you're offering, and as I hear it, man, the more you talk about it, the less I like it. This just does really? Not sound like a win for users at all.
Oh man, the end state is a huge win, because we don't have garages, we don't have cars that were paying to individually maintain. We don't have.
And we still have a ton of cars on the road all the time. The number of cars on the road isn't going to change. The number of cars sitting in parking lots is going to go away.
Correct.
We'll still have all these cars on the road all the time.
Right. But
and
if they're all talking to each other and humans aren't driving, that's going to make traffic flow a lot better.
Okay. And so we still have a car-centric community.
Yeah. That ain't changing.
And
that's yeah, at and, least and not here in the sucks. States. And I think that our car fetish here in the States is going to end up leading the rest of the world. Because if the thing that I'm describing becomes a thing, it's going to be so efficient compared to what we have today that the rest of the world will end up emulating it. And the problem with your bus idea, like even if all vehicles were AI-driven buses and individual cars were, probably limited only to the filthy, filthy rich, you've got to wait for your bus. With the system of autonomous yes. vehicles, you're not wait eventually. I know that we can't do it today, but with centrally run and predicted autonomous vehicles, you're not having to wait, and you don't have to rub elbows with other people.
Okay, so the rub elbows with other people part, that doesn't change with autonomous public transportation. However, the wait part, in the United States, that's more of a deal. Outside the United States, not so much. As an example, when I've been in London, between the bus system and the tube system, I think the longest I ever waited for the ride to pull up was 10 minutes, and that was like so much longer than I was normally waiting for the ride to pull up, that I actually had to pull pull out my phone and double check the schedule to make sure that I was in the right place, because it just seemed weird. So the wait today in a well-designed public transportation system, I don't think is an issue. For U.S. drivers, I see that as an issue, simply because we've been conditioned to, there is no wait, you just go get in your car and drive.
Fair, fair.
I accept your apology.
No, I'm definitely, I'm right on this one.
Well, there's a lot of cities, at least some cities in Europe, and I think it's a lot of cities that have focused on no cars in core areas of the cities, and they've seen a revitalization in the areas where I think even if the United States showed this amazing autonomous car sharing system working, they still wouldn't be as interested in a major adoption of that, because it wouldn't fit with the city infrastructure and communities that they've created. I think that this is going to be primarily a U.S. thing.
It could be. I certainly, I've been to other parts of the world, but I am certainly still a product of my environment. However,
what I found,
I'm right on this one.
Yeah, well, what I found in the various places that I've been around the world is that individual cars are far less of a necessity and for many people, not even something they need at all. Whereas here in the United States, it's just basically part of what you have. I mean,
yeah, but
you have
there are
pants when you go out in public and you have a car.
There are some, and which is increasingly less true for young people, right? Young people are increasingly choosing not to get driver's licenses even.
Right.
It was a rite of passage for you and me.
A rite of passage and actually a necessity. I mean, hey, we're Gen X, so we were latchkey kids and we had to have a driver's license because we were part of the transportation system for the rest of our family.
Yeah. I hear Kat.
Yeah, Kat, she's decided that she wants to do an office inspection right now, which is really weird.
Well, that's fair. Yeah. All right, so here let's sort of wrap this up with this.
Okay.
Does Apple want to make cars for you and me to buy? Does Apple want to make cars for Uber and Didi to buy? Or does Apple want to make cars for Apple Ride? Or does Apple just want to
give up on making cars?
Yeah, or have they just given up on making cars? And we haven't seen, I haven't seen any strong rumors about recent testing stuff for an Apple car. But I also forgot their shoulder name, so.
So there is that. That
doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Well, I haven't seen any rumors about extensive Apple car testing either. So
yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while.
And Kat concurs.
Thank you, Kat. I appreciate that. I don't have a strong feeling. It is conceivable that Apple has moved past Project Titan to a future where it's worried about CarPlay only. That is conceivable. And it is even conceivable that Apple is wanting CarPlay to do more. That's also conceivable. I feel like Apple is still mentally invested in being at this intersection of autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles, and ride sharing.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
I don't know how much of that though is me merely projecting. I mean, those things are going to happen whether or not Apple's a part of it. Right. I mean, ride sharing, fleets of autonomous electric vehicles that are being operated by companies like Uber or their successors are inevitable unless Civilization ends. And I want for Apple to be a part of that. So that's where I might just be projecting. But otherwise, it is happening regardless of Apple's involvement.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And the Civilization ending, hey, that's a crapshoot right now. So, you know, it's a race. Civilization ends or widespread autonomous car sharing happens. You know, it could go either way.
Okay. Fair enough. And I think we're going to have to leave it there, Jeff. So what do I do? I do that, right? And then I say that's this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write us at contextmachine.io. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass was recorded by Boom, just for us. And this week's episode was sponsored by LinkedIn. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. Once again, that's linkedin.com/ACM. Terms and conditions apply. And I'm over at on the Twitter. I'm at GeekTales.
You are. And hey, thank you, LinkedIn Jobs. That's awesome. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Jay Gamut on both.
Sweet. Excellent. All right. On that note,
Phil Schiller.
Well, let me write that down.